Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I'm really, really excited. I get to welcome to the show Rick Barker. Now, Rick is a personal manager. He's a marketing consultant and public speaker, and he's also the former manager of Taylor Swift. After 13, we were talking earlier about words that we type incorrectly. So I've got that on my brain, and now I'm going to mispronounce them. Thanks, Rick.
No worries.
After a 15-year career in radio, Rick moved over to the record company side in 2004 after accepting a job with Big Machine Records. And while he was there, he developed a unique touring model, which it really helped create opportunities for recently signed artists with or without a national radio single that helped them to get in front of audiences, and he called that Nashville to You, or Nashville if you are from the South. The concept was no matter where you live in the country, he could bring Nashville to you, and some of the first acts he took out were Sugarland, love them, Josh Turner, Rodney Atkins, I'm a fan of all of them. But we're not talking today just about the music industry. Rick is going to share his passion for business and how some of the same tactics that he used to catapult Taylor Swift to the top of the music charts can easily be incorporated into your own business. Rick, thank you so much. I know you're on the road. I know you're parked in a parking lot to talk with me. I really appreciate it.
No worries. I'm outside my favorite coffee shop, so I went ahead and got a cup of the brew, and now I'm sitting out here enjoying my time with you.
Well, there you go. Listen, you have got an amazing story. I was listening to your interview with Jim Palmer, and it was a great interview. And honestly, I would like to just hear more of the same. You've got a great, great backstory. Can you tell our audience a bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm a product of divorce. Parents and everything that comes with that. So I moved around a lot as a kid, and I went to 3 high schools in 4 years and constantly found myself having to be the kid who got to know people real quick. I was never shy or anything like that, but I really wanted to find my place. I was never in a position, kind of, you know, grew up poor, so I never played instruments, but I always had a passion and a love for music. There's early pictures of me, you know, 3 years old with headphones on, and my grandparents would use the headphones and the music to put me to sleep. So music has always been a part of me in some way, shape, or form. I ended up finding my passion was as a mobile disc jockey. That way I was able to play music and throw parties and support people, and did that for a while. At 17 years old, I moved from Alabama to California, and once I started getting into the radio side of things, I found myself starting to promote bands and find what I used to always say is finding people more talented than me and doing everything that I could to expose their music. And I've just always loved music, always thought like an entrepreneur. And fortunately, I've been blessed to just be able to have some great mentors, you know, that always challenge me to. I have a saying that I use all the time. It's called weird wins. And the reason that I like that is because 98% of the folks won't do weird, so it eliminates 98% of the competition. And
really?
That philosophy, you know, there's people get comfortable. You know, they're so scared to step out of their comfort zone. And, you know, we don't need – the thing I look at is that, you know, it's tough because we're told to be different, but yet the most popular selling things are things that everyone knows. You know, it's like you say, I want my hamburger stand to be different and I don't want it to be like McDonald's, but yet McDonald's outsells everyone. And you're like, I've got the best chicken in the world And it's different, but yet Kentucky Fried Chicken is the best. So people may tell you that they want different and unique, but their buying habits show different. So where do you draw the line there? So what I've always done and what I've always taught people in any business is go out and find the audience first. Most people will create the product and then go out and try to sell it to somebody who had no hand in any of it. And with Taylor, the easy part about that was is that it's kind of a catch-22, Denise, because at the time when launching Taylor, we only had MySpace. So she didn't have a song on
radio.
She didn't have a record that was out. Nope, that was it. MySpace was all
there
was.
I did not know.
No Twitter yet. No YouTube. We brought her out in 2004. And what she did, though, was that she spent the time getting to know her audience. She figured out what made them laugh, what made them cry, where they shopped, what they liked about boys, what they didn't like about boys. And then she went and built a record and wrote a record for that audience. And then when she released her record, it went gold, which means it sold 500,000 copies in 13 weeks, which was a record at the time. That was not by mistake. That's because she built the product for an audience that was already there for it. So,
well, that makes
that's
sense.
What
I wouldn't have thought of that, but you know, that makes absolute sense. I'm sorry, keep on going. I'm fascinated. Keep on going.
Yeah, well, the concept is this. You know, whenever I speak, I always do this one line, and anybody feel free to use it, but I'll always ask folks, I'll say, what makes a successful hamburger stand? And every time, majority of the room, great hamburger. And I'm like, absolutely not. It's hungry people. Because if you have a great hamburger stand in a town full of vegans, you're going to go broke. So you need to go find hungry people and then service them with your product. And that's what I've always done. I found when we started the Nashville to You tour that the people were hungry for live entertainment. And where I was at in California, it didn't come around that often, so I created a program that brought it around. But what I did was is I couldn't sustain it by myself. So I needed to go find five or six other radio stations that were all willing to do the same thing that I was. So in any business adventure that I get into right now, what I do is I go and I find partners who will also benefit from the success of my business. Most people go out and just try to track down customers, and you can spend a lot of money doing that and a lot of advertising.
And time.
And, you know?
Yep.
But what I did in the music side of the business is I sat there and I said, okay, let me think about this for a second. With Music Industry Blueprint, the current business that I have, if I'm creating artists and helping people set up successful careers, who benefits from that? I went, well, if I'm creating artists and we're going to need the vocal coaches, the guitar centers, they're called performance rights organizations, and those are the companies that collect your money from your radio airplay and streaming. So I had BMI, ASCAP. So what I did is I went to them and I said, here's what my business is. How can I serve your clientele? I didn't go to them and say, hey, would you advertise for me? Hey, would you share my stuff with your list? I just went and said, how could I serve you? And from learning that concept through great people like Brenda Burchard and Jeff Walker and Jay Abraham, that really completely changed my life. Because in any business that we're in, I just happen to be in the music business, it's all the same. We have a product, we want to build a relationship with an audience, and we want them to consume as often as possible. Like Jay Abraham says, there's only three ways to grow a business. You need more customers, increase the cost of your transaction, increase the number of transactions. That's it. Other than that, you're just kind of throwing stuff out there. So I've always been a student of these folks. I mean, I didn't go to college. That wasn't a luxury that was afforded to me. Unfortunately, I'm 46 years old, which isn't unfortunate. What was unfortunate was during the 80s, I was doing everything I could to put any chemical possible into my body living in Hollywood, California. So now, being over 21 years sober, I look at things a little different. So during the age where I would have normally gone to college, unfortunately, I was high. So it wasn't something. But when I got sober in 1992, all I wanted to do was learn and learn and learn. And it was just a blessing that I felt that way, that I was always grasping for knowledge. I was always going and taking classes of things that were important to me, because I was always told, early on, as long as you can sell, you will never be out of work.
That's true. Do you mind sharing how you got sober, why you got sober? I think that's an important part
of your story.
I
don't mind sharing that at all. I ended up getting hooked on rock cocaine. I had a breakup with a girlfriend, and this guy said, "Hey, take this. It'll make all your negatives feel positives." And he was absolutely right. It did. And for every day, for almost 4 years after that, I was high. My habit at the end was about 7 grams a day. When I quit, I weighed 118 pounds. As a male, that's not a very healthy or comfortable weight. Had super long hair. And on April 4th, 1989, I just got down on my knees and prayed that God would let me die and not wake up. I was chicken to put a gun to my head. I knew I was dying a slow death anyway, but I just wanted it to end. I prayed that prayer. I went to sleep. And 2 days later, I woke up, and I haven't had a craving since that day. So he obviously had other plans for me, which mm-hmm. was cool. It allowed me, by when I got into radio, because of my story, I've always been very honest and open about it. I've been able to go in and work with kids. I've been able to share with them it's not what you do, it's what you do after. And I think for whatever reason, that was the plan that he had for me. And I don't mean to say that to people if they're not into that stuff. I always tell people I'm not a real religious person. I'm a pretty spiritual person, though, because mm-hmm. something happened that shouldn't have happened. With everything really? That was going in my body, I should not be alive. But now my whole thought process on life's different. You know, I'm in a business right now that's very hard to please anyone. I'm in a business where people can really take advantage of folks on their hopes and their dreams. But because I'm also involved in a program where I practice these principles of honesty in all my affairs, my goal every day, Denise, is basically if I can go to bed and I don't owe anyone an apology for trying to wrong them to better me, I had a fantastic day. Not every day am I going to make everyone happy. Not every day is everyone going to make me happy. But as long as I know that I'm not trying to better you or hurt you to better me, then I'm doing all right.
And that is, thank you for sharing that. The reason I was asking was not to be intrusive or be nosy, but you're working with, I think, in many ways, an at-risk population.
Absolutely.
So, you have to lead by example, do you not?
You do, and you also have to understand when not to get preachy. You know, it's one of those things where people are going to have to experience things in their own life. If I was to say I had zero fun times when I was out drinking and using, I would be lying to you right now. I had mm-hmm. a lot of great times. Unfortunately, I was a more type of person. There are plenty of people that can go to dinner and have a glass of wine and everything be fine. At the time, I wasn't that guy. You know, alcohol was never really a big issue for me. It was the drugs, but I knew if I got drunk, I'd make poor decisions, and I'd be a mm-hmm. bad father and a husband, and no telling what would end up happening. So I just chose to go completely drug and alcohol free. I mean, there's plenty of other things that give me adrenaline now, you know, that I get. I mean, when I had my daughter, oh, my gosh, you know, you can't get more higher than that. When now I've got two kids, you know, so I've been blessed to look at things a little bit different. I've been blessed, like I said, to have amazing mentors and to get some great opportunities in life. You know, I told somebody the other day, I was talking to them. They said, "So where do you think your biggest secret of success is?" I said, "I plagiarize lazy people." And they're like, "What?" I go, "I'm usually not the first to come up with a lot of things. I'm usually the first to finish it and to put my own change on it." So that's what I challenge any entrepreneur to do, is to get rid of that to-do list and make it the size of a post-it note and go get those things done, wad it up, and get to the next one. So many people have so many things on their list that they never get anything accomplished. And it's terrible. My buddy John Acuff, who's a fantastic writer and blogger, has this book called Start. It's Punch Fear in the Face, Going from Average to Awesome, and I encourage everyone to look that up. And that's what it's all about. So many people have all these great ideas, but they just never start. Every day, their list gets bigger and bigger. I'm like, start knocking things off your list, people. Knock them off your list.
And that is great advice. Look, I've been guilty of that, Rick. I mean, there was a period in my life, I'll tell you straight out, my list was color-coded and synchronized. It was insane. And I was married to the list. It didn't do me well, let me just put it that way, because I was always trying to knock things off the list and something else would pop up because I have a mind like a squirrel. And, you know, it's like, ooh, okay, let me add that one. And you know, this is how I would stay disciplined. It's like, okay, take care of this one. And I have learned, you know, through trial and error and backaches and beating myself up when I go to bed going, what did you get done today? To just darn do it. Seriously, just do it.
It's funny. I hired here in Nashville where I'm located. We have Belmont University, amazing college. And I went and I picked up, I said I was looking for an intern for a day. And they were like, intern for a day? I said, it's a paid internship. I said, I'm going to pay somebody $100 for today. And all I want them to do is note everything that I do during the day. Because the problem that I was having is that I was getting into my office and I was starting an email, and in the afternoon when I was leaving, that daggum draft was still there. Never failed. Every day there was one. So I sat there and I paid this girl and she followed me around, and at the end of the day, what it come to realize is that when I would start the email, I would see another email, because most our computers, if you're on a Mac, it pops up when the next email comes up, and if you think it's important, you click on it, you never get back. My phone would ring. I would do a text message. I was doing so many different things than finishing what it is that I was supposed to do. So after I saw that, I sat there and I went, holy cow. And then as you and I are both students of Brendon Burchard, he says, don't start your email in the day, because then you're on everybody else's agenda and not your own.
And that's true. And, that is absolutely true.
It's so true.
Yep. Yeah.
It's so true. So what's been blessed for me now is that, you know, when I got the opportunity to manage Taylor, I had no experience. I was brought in because when I went from the radio side to the record side and absolutely loved it. And then she happened to be at that label. And what was interesting was I received the offer to go work for this radio station. And Scott Borchetta, who you can Google search him, he's a brilliant person, and he's doing some amazing things in the music business right now. He had taken a liking to me because I played music. I didn't care if it was an artist that everyone knew. I always felt that it's only unfamiliar if you don't play it. If I play it on my station and get my audience excited about it, there's a chance that I could bring that artist to come to town. Mm-hmm. So he called me and said he was going to offer me a job as a record promoter. I asked him, why me? I had zero experience. And because of the Nashville to You tour, I had been helping promote these artists. I just wasn't really getting paid for it. You know, in the radio world, it's a passion. So there's not a lot of money there unless you're in a major market and so on and so forth. So he was able to double the money that I was making, give me an opportunity to travel. I had never really traveled because I never had the money to travel. So I had 9 states, 70 radio stations, and my responsibility was to get radio airplay for these artists. So I asked him why he chose me, and he says, Rick, he says, I'm going to say this, and I mean it as a compliment. He says, you're too dumb to know any better. And I went, that's a compliment? You know, I kind of chuckled for a second. He said, well, here's the deal. He says, I'm going to start a record label with Jack Ingram, who at the time was a regional act out of Texas and had been dropped from a couple labels, Danielle Peck, who had no prior radio success, and a 15-year-old named Taylor Swift, who no one had ever heard of. He said, the people in Nashville will use that as an excuse to fail and why it wouldn't work. He said, you just seem to know one direction. You know, he says, he told me, he says, you say that you have a GED. He said, I say that you have a GSD. He said, you just get stuff done. But he used another word in place of the S.
Yeah.
And that became my calling card for a while, is that, you know, people were like, if you want to get a project done, go find Rick Barker. You know, he's a great team player. I have a coaching background while doing radio in Santa Barbara. I coached men's soccer at UC Santa Barbara, so I've always been a goal-oriented person. I've always been work from the goal and work backwards. Most people work forwards. They just kind of go. And when you work forwards, you're reactive. If you have a goal and work backwards, you're proactive. And that's the difference sometimes in a successful business and a non-successful business, is just by the way that you approach it. So Taylor wanted to learn radio. I came from radio, so he shipped her and her mom out to me in California. She spent 30 days with me that would go on to change both of our lives. She wanted to learn. I wanted to teach. I was learning the record business as she was learning the record or the radio business, you know, so it really worked out well for both of us. And I did that. Things went fantastic. And then about 6 months later, her parents called and asked if I wanted to be her manager. And my first answer was no, that I didn't have any experience. And basically they said, look, they said, she wants you because you know how to make her work and you show her work and you respect and believe in her. He said, we can help you figure out. And I'm also one of those people, and this is going to sound weird, but I highly encourage you. I was like that little kid that always walked around going, why? How come? Why? How come?
Oh, me too.
Ask questions. Yeah, yeah, I've always asked questions. And if somebody that was successful was going to take the time to share their knowledge with me, it didn't matter to me what business it came from. I spent the time to listen. And that's what they noticed. They said, you're not afraid to go ask questions. You're not afraid to go get the answers. And because of the Nashville to You tour, I had helped a whole bunch of other managers help break their artists. So there was an open communication that I could call up a manager and say, hey, by the way, I'm looking at this contract. I don't understand this. And before I go back to my client, look like a fool, will you help me out? And they did. You know, they admired the fact that I would come and ask. Nobody likes a know-it-all, so why try to be a know-it-all? You know, if we don't like that person, why would we ever want to be that person? And that's what I share with artists sometimes. It's like, you know, if a fan's giving you the opportunity to have their email address and all you're doing is bombarding them with sales letters all the time, how do you react when your email's trashed with sales letters all the time? You delete them. You start not wanting to hear from those people. So for any business owner that's out there, don't expect your consumer to behave or act much different than the way you behave and act. And if it's something that you wouldn't do yourself, by all means, don't send that out to your client, because you're just basically saying, I don't care about you. I know that this bothers me, but you know what? It's okay that it can bother you. Shame on you if that's the business model that you have. But a lot of people are doing it without even knowing any better.
Well,
because
that's
the way
true.
They're all trained.
That's the way they've been taught. And you know, they see other people doing it who are allegedly big marketers, and you know, that's a successful business model. Let me emulate that. It's really not a successful business model. And I mean,
well, the thing is,
so very clearly.
You have to pick and choose. Yeah, you have to pick and choose. You know, I'm a very curious person, and I wanted to figure out why I was in a business, the music business, that creates more content than a lot of people. And I couldn't figure out why we were getting our butts handed to us online by a bunch of real estate guys. You know, these guys were doing these white papers. You know, click here to get the 5 keys to not foreclose on your home. And everybody was sending them their emails and getting all this stuff. So I started really studying that market, sitting there going, okay, how can I use something of value, which that was a value for the real estate person. How can I create something of value in the music business? And what the clients and the fans valued was the music. How could I create and develop a way to get the music in the hands of the fans? Because what happens is that everyone said, hey, there's this thing called Facebook, and you can run these Facebook ads, and then you can send people to iTunes, and then you can do this, and then you can do that. And me coming from the other side of the fence, understanding, you know, squeeze pages and the value of a list, I'm like, why are we as an industry spending so much money driving our consumer to someone else and to locations that we don't control? And what I mean by that is, if I'm constantly telling people to go like me on Facebook, when Facebook shuts down, I have no access to my fan. I'm constantly sending people to Amazon. Amazon knows more about the buying habits of our consumers than we do. And we're the ones driving them there. So the concept and what I did was I started learning the value of a list. I started learning, going back to what Taylor and I did, going, okay, wait a minute. If I have a location where everyone's at, which is now my email list, because there's 300,000 social media things out there, so I use those social media things to drive them to the list, how can I start building a relationship with this list so that when I need them, they feel obligated? That old 80-20 rule, and my 80-20 rule is a little different than everyone else's. My 80-20 rule is 80% of the time we're giving so that the 20% that we need them, they feel obligated. It's a no-brainer at that point.
I agree.
And we're building such a relationship with this consumer that they are friends, that we know everything about them, where they shop, what they do, what they drink, what they buy, what, how many kids they have. You know, every little bit of information that we can get from them, I want to be able to get from them. And that's the big dog. And that's me. When you can do that, you're the big dog, man. When you've got all the information, everyone, I mean, he who has that information wins. I mean, Amazon knows exactly what to send me offers on because they've paid attention. They never send me the offer to buy something that has nothing to do with me. Yeah. If we could only do that in our business, we would make so much more long-term clients and long-term revenue. I always tell people, much easier to get a second kiss than it is a first kiss. So once you've been given that first kiss by that client, love them and love them and love them and love them and love them, and you'll be able to continue that long-lasting relationship.
But, and I tell this, you know, my group of people who follow me are, you know, business owners, entrepreneurs, they're virtual assistants, they're web developers, largely virtual service providers. And I tell them constantly, you cannot just wallpaper people's front door with offers. You need to be a resource. They need to like you, trust you, value you.
Yes,
so, you know,
first.
Just constantly,
you know,
you know, being out.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. You can't just go, hey, look at me, look at me, look at me. I got great stuff for you. No, you really don't, because I don't know you.
Right, and that's the way people feel, because there's no shortage of people wanting to get their attention. And that's what I explain to artists right now. You know, when I launched the Music Industry Blueprint, what I found out was is that I was. It's very hard right now for people to get a record deal, because a lot of the labels have shut down. They've realized that they're just not making as much money as they used to, so they're not able to put a lot of money into the development of artists. They're looking for artists to come a little bit more developed. So I'm walking around Nashville, Los Angeles, New York, and I go, wow, there's all these things built around the songwriter. There's great organizations like ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. You come to Nashville, there's the National Songwriters Association International. There's lots of vocal coaches, lots of guitar teachers. There was no one teaching people how to be artists. And I started learning more and more. Everyone would come to me. Once someone finds out that you're in the music business or whatever business you're in, you know, they're going to come and say, hey, would you listen to this CD and tell me if you think my daughter has what it takes? And I look at them and I go, you know what, that's like me throwing one perfect pass and asking Aaron Rodgers if I could be the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. You know, there's so much more than that. But all they were saying to me is that I don't have anyone to ask. There's a lot of people that had questions, not a lot of qualified people willing to give them answers. There were a lot of kids coming to town. Their parents were trying to help them fulfill their dreams, and they were making records they shouldn't make, doing photo shoots they shouldn't do, and the next thing you know, they're a couple $100,000 into this thing, and they're no further along than when they got here because somebody fed off of their dreams. So I got to thinking, and I'm sitting there asking a lot of questions, and I said, wait a minute, you know, in most businesses, you just go to the Chamber of Commerce, and they'll give you a new business packet. It'll have the names of the banks and the electricity people and blah, 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 blah. There was nothing like that for the music business. Everyone had answers, but nobody qualified had the time to share. Everybody had questions, excuse me. Nobody qualified with experience, recent experience, was out there answering these questions. And that's when I decided that I was going to be that person. When I left Taylor in 2008, at the time, my daughter was 4 years old. My son was two. I was still living in California. I would drive from Santa Barbara to L.A., catch a plane, land in Nashville, catch a bus, tour for 3 days, back to Nashville, catch a plane, back to L.A., back to San, and it was going on and on and on. My last year with Taylor, I was gone 185 days.
Oh.
I was being put in a position where I was going to make more money than I have ever made or seen in my life. And once again, I prayed. I'm like, okay, God, what's the deal here? You know, I will always be able to provide for my family, but is it going to be in the form of alimony and child support? Because there's no way that I'm going to be able to be a father to my kids if I'm gone that much. And having come from divorced parents, I chose the family. And it was the best decision I ever made because it opened up so many doors. It showed me just how much money consultants really make. Crud, had I known that, I would have been becoming a consultant a long time ago. I remember the first time I was approached by a major label here in Nashville that said, hey, would you be interested in being a consultant? I went, absolutely. And then I went home and Googled, what does a consultant do? And it said, advises in areas of expertise. I'm like, okay, cool, I can do that. You know, and then when they told me what it paid.
I'm not laughing at you.
No, trust me, it's a funny story. No, my son was very smart. At 3 years old, he would always tell me, ask Google Daddy, he knows everything. You know, so I went and I was like, I don't mind learning, so I figured it couldn't be that hard, you know. So I went in and I did it, and, you know, I was with that company for 3.5 years, made fantastic money, built major credibility, continued to develop relationships, and I had my own management office. I had picked up a couple other clients because I thought that's what you did as a manager. You just find clients and hope they make it, and one day you make a lot of money or you don't make anything. I kept finding clients that were super talented, but were continuing not to be able to generate enough income. So I'm taking all my consulting money and using it to run the management office. And I'm like, wait a minute here. I'm making, you know, mid six figures, and all of a sudden half of it's going into a company where these artists aren't really appreciative of what's happening. And I was like, wait a minute. It's a privilege to be in this business, not a priority. And, you know, the hardest thing is going and telling an artist that they're being dropped from their label when they did nothing wrong. But what they did wrong, they will say they did nothing wrong. But what I kept seeing over and over is that record companies were not dropping artists who were selling records. They were not dropping artists who had a fan base or a tour plan in place. They were dropping artists that weren't doing well on the radio and there was no fallback plan. So after I complained for a while, I went out and said, I'm going to become the solution. I'm not going to be the problem. And I went and I fired all of my artists. I shut down my management company and I set out on a journey to figure this thing out. I knew what the problem was. I knew partially what needed to be done to fix it, but I knew I had to go out and create examples to show these labels that if we just gave the music away and used it as a marketing tool, we would end up making more money in the long run. And the town was so bent on, we don't give our music away. People need this. People need that. And I'm like, you don't understand. You get one email address, and that email address, if you learn how to build the relationship, could be worth hundreds of dollars to you. Stop arguing over the 79-cent download. You're fighting the wrong fight. And that's what I set out to prove. I started interviewing all these marketing folks. I started having them look at our program and figuring out what we talked about earlier, that we date. You know, we just go straight for the kill. It's like walking up to a stranger on the street going, hey, you want to have sex? You know, you may get somebody to say yes, but probably not the person that you want to have sex with was the example this guy used. But I understood that. So we went out and I started taking unsigned artists and building these relationships. I started going to Twitter and saying, hey, if anybody has questions about the music business, I'm willing to do a free webinar to ask your questions. 20 people showed up the first time, about 80-something the second time. The third time, I got over 200. I cut it off at 200 because that's what I receive for free from any meeting. Had I known what I know now, I would have paid the extra to get all 200-something in there. But I didn't know at that point, you know. I didn't realize what my ratios were and how people responded to what it is that I was doing. So as I kept doing this, what I found out was that people want the blueprint. They want the secrets. And I realized that because those were all the things I was signing up for online. I'm like, hey, I want the secrets on how to foreclose or to buy foreclosures. Hey, I want the secrets on how to do that. I want the secrets on how to get skinny. You know, I want the blueprint on how not to be fat. You know, I looked at all the things I was responding to going, wait a minute. What if I could create something like this? I have access to all these experts in the business. I have the ability to go in and record them and let these people who can't get access to them all of a sudden have access to them. And that's where the launch of the Music Industry Blueprint came in. I built a website and a portal which allowed people the opportunity to start getting their questions answered and learning what they could do in their community to be the best them. Because I could either do that and help thousands of people, or I could go out and try to find that next Taylor Swift, which I wasn't going to find. There is never going to be another Taylor, but the thing is you can work 3, 4, 5 years, love the music of the artist, and never make a dime. I'm proof of that. So I wasn't going to go that route again, but I see how much money these schools are making on education. I'm realizing that if you have quality information, people are willing to pay for it. And I went, okay, wait a minute. I've got 25 years of experience. I'm one of the only folks that has been in the radio side of the business, the record promotion side of the business, the management side of the business. I've been on 4 major world tours. Wait a minute, I may have something to offer people. And that's what I started doing. I started going out as I was instructed and started doing these free workshops, giving away my information. And had you told me that I would make the money that I make now by giving away my information a year ago, I would have called you. I said, there's no way. It can't happen. But what I learned through finding people like Brendan and Jeff Walker and Jay Abraham is all you're doing when you're sharing information is building credibility. You're becoming an expert to them. They're seeing your teaching style. They're seeing how you are as a person. Are you a shuck and jive salesman, or are you a communicator? You know, you and I were talking a little bit yesterday. It's like I've been speaking my whole life and have been pretty good at it, but now I've spent more time learning how to become a better communicator. And people are like, wait a minute. I said, no, you don't understand. I'm becoming a better storyteller. I'm starting to figure out what it is you need to hear. What are the triggers that you want to know before I need to make you comfortable? I need you to overcome these things. I need to share this with you. It's not like I'm manipulating you. I'm just taking the time to learn what are the things that you need to know and understand before you go into a buy. Because I always tell people, everyone wants to buy. No one wants to be sold to. So where do we draw the line in how we position this? You know, so what I do is I listen a lot. I'll go read comments on Amazon and see what people are complaining about. I'll go see what their hurts and their struggles are. You know, the great thing about what I do is that I've helped launch one of the biggest stars in the world. You can Google search me and it's all positive things that come up. I don't allow everyone into my program because it's not for everyone, and I would much rather you not be here than for me to take your money and have you go say, well, Rick's program doesn't work. It's like me blaming a diet for being fat. No, nope, diet works just fine. Rick got lazy, you know, and that's what usually happens, and that's what I use. And on my website, I give away a free video series. And everybody asks, they go, why isn't there a place where I can buy after the first day or the second day or the third day or the fourth day? I said, because I want to see who's going to get to the fifth day. Because if you don't have the time to watch 20-minute videos 4 days in a row from someone who makes a heck of a lot more money in this business than you do, you don't have what it takes to do the work that's required. Because what I'm trying to teach people is let's do everything we can to build you up in your town so that whatever opportunity comes your way, you're prepared. All I can do is prepare you. I can't guarantee you anything. I can't guarantee you a deal. I can't guarantee anything, but what I do guarantee is that if you study and do the things that I teach you and are held accountable to do those things, when your opportunity presents itself, you'll knock it out of the park. And then it's up to you at that point. And people love the honesty of that. They love the sincerity of it. It's weird. It's like I learned from someone, I said, I was doing it completely backwards, Denise. I was getting the email address, and then I was given a little nibble. And then I was given another little nibble. And then I would give them a little bit better. And Jeff Walker with the product launch formula says, no, 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 no. You give them your best stuff first. Because what you're building in their mind is, wow, if he gave me this for free, I can only imagine what's mm-hmm. in the paid program. If all this gave to me, holy cow.
Right. And you've only got, you know, that first impression is just that, the first impression.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
You might as well make it a really good one.
Well, and I go above and beyond that, too, is because, you know, it's I can make a first impression. It's like, it was just funny. There are certain things that you do when you're married that you would never do when you were dating. And most of those are like bodily functions. And that's just the nicest way I can put it. It's the same way as if you come out and you're just making a great first impression, but your second impression sucks and your third impression sucks. So I try to make a great impression over 4 days. I don't want mm-hmm. to just see like, okay, is he giving me all his stuff the first day because that's all he has? Or is he just being nice and opening doors and pulling out my chair because, you know, he wants to get to that second date because I've told everybody I'll kiss on the second date. You know, it's the same psychology that goes into this. One of the things that I've really tried to stress to people is that you'll always hear people say, being in the right place at the right time. Wow, I was in the right place at the right time. I think it's more than that. I think it's being the right person in the right place at the right time, because I've watched so many artists in the music business get that opportunity that they weren't prepared for and squander it away. So that's my mantra and my goal with these kids is, look, let's do it right the first time. Let's set this business up where you become a good investment for a record company. And if you're in regular business, do everything you can to say, okay, am I a good investment if you're looking for an investor? Investors usually want to see something that is producing results or getting ready to produce results. And I always use the oil business as an example. If I walk into an oil field, I'm not going to look and go, wow, that well's pretty. Wow, that one's got cute little flashing lights. Oh my gosh, that one must be the best because it's brand new. I'm going to walk in and say, which ones are producing barrels of oil right now and which ones are on the verge of producing. I don't care how ugly the well is. And then after I find out which ones are producing, then I'll go find out, okay, this well's a little shoddy. We may need to invest a little bit here, but it's already producing, so it's going to cover itself. It's the same thing for an artist. If an artist is already doing shows, they've already got their online presence built up, they have all those things taken care of and in place, then it gives them a chance to say, wow, okay, wait a minute. If we put our marketing and our resources and our experience and expertise into this ball that's already rolling, wow, watch out. Watch out.
Yeah. And that makes absolute sense. But, you know, I'm listening to you very intently, and what really grabs me about your story, Rick, is there have been at least twice, I think three times, that I've identified where you just stepped off the edge of the earth and took a massive leap of faith in yourself.
Yeah, I, you know, it's one of those things where my wife laughs. My wife and I, have, you know, they say opposites attract. My wife's all about the list. You know, my wife's all about, you know, never paying a finance charge on a credit card. You know, her mom was like that. Dave Ramsey would not like my backstory because I've never, if I would have lived my life, if you can't pay cash, you can't afford it, I'd still be broke. You know, I looked at it, well, if I was good enough to consistently make payments and people were willing to give me credit and I have a huge credit score, utilize everything that you have access to. You know, I'm a, for lack of a better phrase, and I apologize if this offends anyone, I'm a go big or go home. I'm a balls to the wall. You know, I'm mm-hmm. like, if there's something that I see, I will sit down and plan it out. I don't do it erratically. I'll sit down and say, okay, if it takes this, this, and this, do I want to go? Because what a lot of people will do, and I think this is dangerous, is they'll go get investors. And then all of a sudden, they're getting investors to go into a business that they're not familiar with to try to make it work. And usually they lose the business, The investors lose the investment. If I have access, and I'll just use, for example, a line of credit for $20,000, why am I going to go give away part of my company, possibly ruin a relationship, if I can take $10,000 of my own dollars and try it myself? Because what happens is, once something's working, money will find you. Most people go out and take investments before they know anything. They try to learn the business with someone else's money, and that's very, 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 very dangerous. And in some states, you can be sued. You know, there's a lot that goes along with that. So I've always been one that if I have to max out a credit card, by golly, I'm going to max out a credit card, and I'm going to make this thing work, because then I'm the one that's under pressure, because I don't want to go back to my wife and say, oops, you know.
Yeah, really.
I'm more fearful of her than I am of somebody repossessing anything, you know. So I strategize this. I always tell people, it's 401 Rick. You know, there is no 401k for me. I am my retirement plan, so I have to swing big. But luckily for me, because I strategize, I plan, I do my educating, I educate before I launch a product. I go out to find if there's a hungry market. I go out to find if there's people that like hamburgers. And then I go build a hamburger stand, and that's what I did with the Music Industry Blueprint. There are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of beautiful young people who can sing, whose parents have no clue what's going on. So I started thinking to myself, going, wait a minute, if I can create a quality product at an affordable price, I will never run out of potential clients, because every year people keep having babies that ultimately will want to be famous. And now people are looking at my model going, holy cow, he's right. And everything I teach isn't genre specific. It's not just for country music people. Artists to fans, what I teach with the music business, I teach regular businesses. You have a consumer that you need to build a relationship with. How are we going to do that? So I've been able to consult businesses not even in the music business based upon the things that I've created through the music business, if that makes any sense.
Well, it does, and that's really one of the reasons I was so anxious to talk with you. I mean, I'm a country music fan. I'm constantly singing. In fact, before we got on the phone, you may have heard, I hope you didn't hear me, but I was actually singing along with Robert Plant and Alison Krauss at the top of my lungs. And fortunately, I hit the mute button and picked up your button before, you know, you heard me just caterwauling in here, but... Listen, I love to sing. I think most people love to sing. We all have something we have to offer, whether it's as an artist or an entrepreneur or a business person or a dog groomer. We all have something. And that's really why I wanted to talk with you, because your business model is so effective across the boards.
Well, and what I would like to do is just, you know, if anybody, I'm very active on Twitter, at Rick Barker Music. My website is musicindustryblueprint.com. And what I would do is go ahead and sign up for the free video series. It will give you an idea of what you could be doing in your business. You can duplicate my model, plagiarize anything that I've done, and create something for yourself, because all I'm doing is something that I learned. It's called the Sideways Sales Letter. You know, over 4 days, we're going to build a relationship, and on the fifth day, I'm going to give you a chance to continue our relationship. I did not say I'm going to give you a chance to buy or I'm going to sell you anything. I said I was going to give you a chance to continue our relationship, and there is a price for that. So take what I give you, see how the emails come, see if it makes sense to you, and then duplicate that for your business. There's a couple books that I would highly recommend, you know, as I know Denise does, The Charge by Brenda Burchard is a fantastic
Absolutely.
Book. I know Denise has quite a few. You've got to constantly read. There's so much free stuff that's out there. I sign up for almost every ebook that's available when it comes to Facebook marketing or Instagram or Pinterest, because your clients are all there. You know, you guys may not want to think so, but they're there. And if you learn how to communicate with them there and learn how to send them things that they find valuable, that they don't feel like they're being sold, it will change your world. And it's free.
And that's exactly right. And you and I had a great conversation yesterday that I really wish we could have recorded. It was just off the cuff. But we were talking about exactly that, you know, reading and absorbing and constantly educating yourself. And I was telling you the story about, you know, we both are big fans of Brandon Bouchard. And, in fact, you're going to one of his events shortly, and I'm so jealous.
Yes, ma'am.
We won't belabor that. But anyway, I remember telling you, I have the hard copy book. I tend to buy books because I love books. I love to crack the spine. I love the way they smell. I started reading when I was 3 years old. I read Atlas Shrugged at 11. I read. I'm a reader. It's what I do. But I also want to hear the books if they're in the author's voice. You know, I don't want to have a novel that I'm listening to. I'd rather read it if I'm going to read a novel. But like I was telling you, I had read The Charge some time ago. I thought, this is a good book, but for some reason, it didn't reach out and grab me by the throat. When I got it on Audible, had it on my iPad, I'm turning my head to the left to look at it, and I started listening to that book in conjunction with three other books, because I've always got several books going on at the same time. I had to take it to bed with me. I literally took my iPad to bed with me, and I listened to that book all night in my sleep. Well, I'm a cat napper, so I would wake up and go, ooh, oh my, and then I would drift back to sleep and go, oh my. I have been sleeping with that book and several others for the past 2 weeks. I don't go to bed anymore without a book that I'm listening
That's
to.
That's funny.
It's amazing. Well, I'm single. I can do that. But don't do this
if
you're married. It's probably a bad idea.
I was telling somebody, I was never a reader. My mind wandered. And until I started really getting into this business, now I've read more books the last year than I've read my whole life. But
yes,
I told somebody, unless it makes me money or a better person, I won't read it.
Yeah, I don't read a lot of junk. I have a lot of business books, and there are a lot that I highly recommend. We had our chat yesterday about that. But while I've got you on the phone, I'm listening to you, and I want to introduce you to a friend of mine who also has a radio show, and she is a sports psychologist who works with at-risk athletes. And
awesome.
I think you two could do some fantastic work together. So
would
I'm
love
going
it.
To intru-
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going to introduce you to her name is Dr. Carla Lundblad. And I mean, she's fantastic. I mean, you've got to meet her. I mean, if nothing else, if you guys just have a conversation, you've got to talk. But anyway,
I appreciate that. Yes.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, I think that you two have a lot. You're working with the same kind of population, in some ways. So, anything else that you would like to share with us? So we've still got about 6 minutes, so I don't want to rush you. But is there anything else that is really important that you'd like to tell our audience?
Yeah, you were bringing up something earlier when you were asking me about my sobriety and things, and you know, I'm involved in an amazing program called Celebrate Recovery. And Celebrate Recovery, a lot of times people think that, well, everything's geared around the alcoholic or the drug addict or the Al-Anon. Celebrate Recovery is held at churches all over the country and now all over the world, and it helps people deal with any hurts, habits, or hang-ups, as we call it. And there are a lot of people that struggle with a lot of different things in life, and they just don't really have a place to go share or a place to become comfortable. So I would put a pitch out for that. You know, our groups that we have at the church that I attend is we have 7 groups, 4 for men or 4 for women, 3 for men. And there's a chemical dependency group. There's a codependency group. There's people that deal with sexual abuse. There's people that deal with sexual addiction. We have an A to Z group, which pretty much covers everything. But what I'm seeing is in the communities where people are going to try to figure out what it is that allows them to continually either let themselves be taken advantage of or them taking advantage of others or anything. It's like anything you can do to better yourself is going to end up bettering the world. And I'm big on that. I mean, I was such a user and a taker, and it was all about me, 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 me for so long that now any chance I get or any platform I get to just be able to share with people to say, just treat people the way you want to be treated. And we hear that all the time, but really take that to heart, because so many doors will be opened for you if other people start telling folks, the guy's just honest and he's nice. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we're, especially if you're in a cutthroat business, you know, just by simply telling people no, sometimes this isn't the right program for you, and not taking their money versus, hey, come on in, this will do wonders
right.
for you. I've made more money by saying no to money, if that makes any sense.
I've done the same thing. You know, I've turned away people who want to work with me. You know, either they want a website or they need a virtual assistant, an online business manager. And after I look at what they've already got or don't have, I tell them, no,
right.
you're not ready. I'm not taking your money.
Right.
Go do this, 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 and this. And you come back in 6 to 12 months and we'll talk. But now, no, anything I did for you would go straight down the rabbit hole. You are not there.
Right. And I love that. It's called being transparent. It will make you more money. Someone asked me early on, they said, Rick, what is your goal? You know, ultimately, what is it that you want people saying about you here? And this was right after I had left Taylor and I started consulting the biggest label in town. I said, you know what? I said, my goal is pretty simple. I said, when people come to town and they say there's five people that you need to meet that will shoot you straight and point you in the right direction, I said, I just want to be one of those five. I said, that's all.
Are there five?
That's my goal.
How sad
in
is
this
town, that I have to ask, are there five?
In this town right now, I think there are. You know, if you find the right ones. Problem is they can't be found. You're never able to get to them. So I'm doing things right now with the, you know, since our television show Nashville is so huge, a lot of people coming here to chase their dreams. I'm now doing free artist workshops at the Nashville Convention and Visitors Center right there at Bridgestone Arena. I do a free artist workshop at a place called Two Old Hippies, which is the coolest store. Go look it up online. Two Old Hippies. They have amazing clothes, guitars. It was actually featured in the show Nashville too, which is actually pretty weird that I just brought that up. But I'm doing so many of these free workshops to just kind of give people, here's where you go, this is what you do, this is what you look out for. Don't let somebody tell you this. Don't be afraid to research people online. Just because somebody was in the record company doesn't mean they had anything to do with the artist. You know, so I'm just giving them all the questions that they need to ask. And every day it's getting easier and easier for people to find me, because I did everything under the radar for about a year to get the kinks worked out, because I'm not a big fan of putting out anything ever that you have to make excuses for. Let me
right.
do the due diligence and the research first. A lot of times people start their businesses too soon or open their doors too quick. I'm not that guy. I'll do it under the radar for a while, work all the kinks out, and then we'll go from there.
If they don't do it properly with the due diligence and making sure that they are really ready to serve the population that is coming to them,
right?
Then if you experience explosive growth, now what? I mean, and
exactly.
I've seen that happen.
That's
almost worse than not having people come in the door. Because now you're well known and you're really disappointing people. Not a good thing to do.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Not a good thing to do at all.
No. Well, we have about 90 seconds. Tell people again where they can find you on the internet.
Sure. Easiest one is musicindustryblueprint.com is my website. My email is super easy, rick@rickbarker.com. That's BARKER.com. And from there, you can also find me on Twitter if that's what you're into, @RickBarkerMusic. But thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share. I really appreciate it.
Oh, listen, I'm just so glad you could make it. You stepped in at the very last minute for me, and I appreciate that. And I have to tell you, I'm fascinated by your story. I'm really grateful that you're here with us today. I can't even begin to tell you. And I'm going to share this. This is going to sound a little odd, but while you've been talking, I've been listening, and I've been looking up at the ceiling, because that's the only way I can concentrate if I'm looking at my whiteboard or my computer. You know, I have to kind of
put my head back
and look at blank space so I can really listen and absorb. And I've got to tell you, I am on the edge of a precipice myself. I've got to make some changes in how I do business. And it's frightening. I've reached the point of burnout. I love what I do, but I want to go in a different direction. And I actually made that decision yesterday that I'm just going to do it after talking with you.
Wonderful.
So if I fail, I'll never tell you, but when I succeed big, I'm telling you. But
that's
I won't
right.
fail. I won't fail because it just feels like this is the time to do it. I'm doing my due diligence.
Good.
I'm doing
we'll do
everything
your homework.
That you're saying. Absolutely.
Good.
But I'm going to do it. Yeah, I've been waffling around the edges of it for a while. I'm ready. I'm absolutely ready.
Good girl. Good girl.
I know, and you walked into my life at the perfect time, so thank you.
You're welcome. No, thank you.
Well, listen, we are out of time. We're out of time, definitely. Thank you so much for stopping on the side of the road to talk with me.
No worries. Now I'll turn the air conditioning back on.
Oh, Rick, I'm sorry. Well, listen, everybody.
No worries at all. I got a lot accomplished.
Well, listen, everybody, thank you for being. I know. Well, thank you. You can find us in iTunes. Just type in our names. This is Denise Griffiths and Rick Barker. We're wishing you a wonderful weekend, and this show will be available for download in about an hour. Rick, thank you, and we will be in touch.
You're welcome, and let's stay in touch. Yes,
absolutely, absolutely. Here. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.